When they found him hiding out in an apartment building nearby, he had a 9mm stashed in the ceiling, his mom's prescriptions, and an internet search history that wouldn't do him any favors in court. The hole dug in their backyard didn't help matters either. This is the story of Gary and Laura Johnson, the loving parents who were terrorized to death by their own grown son. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Today's case caught my eye because it involves a quote-unquote savage, barbaric killing and hiding out in a storage space. And also this guy. You know it's going to be an interesting one when the suspect looks like he just got back from a week in a tent at Burning Man. And not even like normal Burning Man, but the 2023 version with all of the mud. It all started in February 2021 when Gary Johnson didn't log in for work on a Tuesday morning. It had actually been several days that this had been going on. He was a remote employee, and you know employers love to complain about their virtual people not doing work, but Gary wasn't the type. He was 65 years old and a longtime employee of this company, and he would never just decide not to work for a week. His company asked the police to go to his Portage, Michigan home for a welfare check. No one had seen him since February 3rd, and it was now February 9th. Police knocked on the door of the house that Gary shared with his 64-year-old wife, Laura, a little after 9 a.m. No response. One of their vehicles was at the house, but the other one was nowhere to be seen. Just in case, authorities made their way inside. Still nobody. But something caught their attention and made them suspicious. They weren't saying what that was, but it looked like something violent had happened. They surrounded the house with police tape. They also brought in shovels that were taken to the backyard. They had discovered a 12-inch hole back there that looked to be freshly dug, and they wanted to explore it more.
Yesterday morning, we received a call from the employer of a Mr. Gary Johnson, and they had reported to us that Gary was a 25-year employee, very responsible, and he had been working from home for the company, and that for the past several days, he had not gotten online or reported to work, and so that concerned them. So based on that concern, we sent officers over to the Johnson house. It's a house that the district officers know about, you know, so they know the people. So they knew that Mr. and Mrs. Johnson lived there. So they tried to knock on the door. They walked around the house. Some of the things they saw around the house were concerning to them. And based on the information they had from the employer, the decision was made to go in to check the welfare of the Johnsons, you know, in the event that maybe they were injured or something was wrong inside. When the officers got inside, they did not find Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, but they did find evidence of what appeared to them to be some sort of violent action or you know, something that worried them about their safety. So with that information, we decided to treat the house as a crime scene, called our crime technicians in. And we've been out there probably for 27 hours straight right now.
But nothing was found in the area. So after being at the home for 27 hours, they called it a missing persons case. They said the public probably wasn't in any danger and asked for help with information about where Gary and Laura could be.
Our top story tonight takes us back to Portage, where there is still a police presence at a home on Romans Road, a home that is now considered to be a crime scene. 3 days into the search for the missing couple who lives there, Portage Public Safety says they now believe there is little to no chance that Gary and Laura Johnson will ever be found alive.
Tonight, Gary's brother tells us his family is hoping for the best, but at this point, they're fearing the worst.
It's been 8 days since anyone has seen or heard from Gary and Laura Johnson.
Gary is the kind of person you would want for a neighbor.
600 miles away in North Carolina, Gary's brother Dave doesn't know what happened, but says he fears he knows what's coming.
There's so much that is not right with this situation. I mean, I believe they are deceased. I hope for a better result.
For 3 days, investigators have been looking for some sort of result here at the Johnson's home on Romance Road, a place Dave says his brother loves.
Gary's happy to stay at home.
Inside that very home, Portage Public Safety Director Nick Arnold says investigators found evidence of violence and signs of foul play. Exactly what those signs are, Arnold isn't saying.
What we found in the house is certainly leading us to believe that this is going to be a homicide.
There's probably two less deserving people of having that happen to them anywhere.
In the meantime, they had managed to locate the Johnsons' other vehicle, the one that was missing from their home. Laura's phone had led them to the Mallard Cove Apartments, just a mile from their home, and that's also where they found the couple's 27-year-old son. It was first reported that Nicholas Johnson was hiding out in a storage shed. He'd been homeless at times for the past several years, and apparently that's where he was living at the time. In the shed, they said. But later reporting said that it was actually a storage unit in the back of the basement of the apartment complex, which seems less shady but more scary somehow. You always think there's something terrifying in the basement, and it turns out you were right this time. Investigators saw Nick watching them from a door to the building and then went after him when he went inside. Obviously, the cops wanted to talk to Nick because you always want to talk to the closest family members in a missing persons case, but Nick happened to also have outstanding warrants for a felony and a misdemeanor. These stemmed from a 2019 incident when the Johnsons had a restraining order against their son, but he invaded their home and assaulted his own father. He pleaded guilty, served 30 days, and then got out and did it again. This time, he stole $1,000 from them. Then he came back later in the year and threatened to beat up his parents if they didn't let him stay at home. They offered him money and help with mental health treatment, bless their hearts. This probably wasn't the first time they tried to help either. Nick had 2013 and 2014 home break-ins on his record, three old misdemeanors, and a charge of causing injury while resisting arrest, just to name a few. The guy clearly had a temper. His mom had applied for the restraining order in 2018 when Nick had been upset about getting broken up with and pushed her, causing a head injury. His parents were always living in fear of what he'd do next, but they didn't want to give up on their son. On Wednesday, February 10th, 2021, after being found in that apartment complex basement, Nicholas Johnson was arraigned for his outstanding warrants and now two new felony weapons charges. He had been hiding out with a loaded 9mm, a full magazine, his parents' IDs, and his mom's cell phone, among other property from their house. On that cell phone, internet searches had been conducted after Gary stopped showing up to work that asked things such as how to transfer money from a trust, how much the medication prescribed to Laura was worth, and if Ring doorbells keep recording after the base has been taken off. Yes, Gary and Laura had a trust, and their only son was their only beneficiary. In court that day, the prosecutor recommended that Nick be held without bond due to his long history of skipping out on court appearances and meetings with his probation officer. The judge called for him to be held on $100,000 bond for each of the new weapons charges. The next day, the authorities took over a hunting area in the city where the Johnsons lived. The Gourd Neck State Game Area is a wildlife conservation and hunting ground in Kalamazoo County, managed by the Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Hunters can find turkeys, deer, rabbits, and squirrels there, and several species of small birds are protected for bird watching. With the GPS on Laura's Ford Escape showing multiple visits to the gaming area, the case was now being considered a homicide. And Nick was certainly being considered a person of interest, if not an outright suspect.
Breaking news right now in Portage, where police are searching a wooded area a short drive from the home of a missing couple.
Here's video just in from our crew at the scene. This is where Angling Road turns into Vanderbilt Avenue, right along US 131. Portage police have Angling Road blocked off, and there is police tape along the side of the road in a wooded area. We asked the public safety director if there are developments in the Gary and Laura Johnson disappearance. He told us, quote, "We are continuing to work on the Johnson case. Nothing new to report at this time."
Authorities visited the game area late at night on Thursday when the information from the GPS tracker came in, and then they were able to verify what they'd suspected. Someone had been digging at a certain spot recently. Then a cadaver dog hit on that exact spot. Officials began a dig of their own on Friday.
Was there any, when you said the dogs hit on an area back there, was there any signs of, you know, recent digging back there?
Yeah, to say, I mean, the area looked different than everything else around it. So, you know, not only was it suspicious visually, but then you have a dog hit on it. It just kind of confirms that, okay, something went on here and possibly there's something here, so.
That afternoon, they found two bodies wrapped in tarps and stuffed in shallow graves. The Portage public safety chief said it's a sad ending, or at least a sad part of the case, but hopefully if these do turn out to be the Johnsons, that will make it a little easier on the family to at least know where their loved ones are. But it's a horrible case all the way around, and we've still got a lot of work to do. On February 15th, 2021, the bodies were confirmed to be Gary and Laura. It wasn't clear when they had died, but their bodies had already begun to decompose. Gary had died from a single shot to the head, and the amount of gunpowder residue left behind meant that the gun was probably mere inches away. Laura had been shot twice in the head and three times in the upper back. The markings on the bullets looked as if they come from the gun Gary and Laura's son Nick was found in the basement with. 3 days later, the judge in this case revoked that previous bond he had set. Nick had a public defender who said, yes, he has mental health issues, but he emphatically denied committing the crimes. His lawyer asked for a low bond so that Nick could, quote unquote, assist in the development of his case. The judge said, no, thank you. It came out at this time that those suspicious signs of violence that tipped off authorities the day they went to do the welfare check on Gary Johnson were indeed very suspicious. There was blood splattered on the walls and ceiling of their home. Their couch was missing. Bloody sheets and couch cushions were in the washing machine. There was a spent shell casing in the car still parked in the garage, along with a red-brown liquid on the floor. Nick admitted that he had cut up the couch and taken it out of their home in garbage bags. Cut up the couch. Nicholas Alexander Johnson was charged with 2 counts of open murder and 2 counts of felony firearm. He underwent multiple mental competency exams because his lawyer hoped to argue insanity. But he was found competent in mid-2021, and a trial date was set in August. Nick had tears in his eyes during his preliminary examination, and the photo of him with wet cheeks makes me feel some empathy, I have to say. On October 2nd, 2023, Nick was in court again. Now 30 years old, he pleaded no contest to 2 counts of second-degree murder. Though he was deemed competent, prosecutors took his mental health into account when deciding on plea deal terms. They proposed a minimum of 29 years in prison. At his sentencing in November, the judge said, "This is a truly ruthless, savage, barbaric course of events that was undertaken by Nicholas Johnson." The reporter for the newspaper M Live, which did an amazing amount of work in this case, said that Nick showed little remorse nor understanding of the crime he'd committed. He told the judge, though, that he didn't know how someone else could care more about his mother and father than he did. But he said their relationship had rough times, and he apologized to everyone who had to, quote unquote, put up with this situation. Nick went on to say that he would never hurt anybody ever, and that he had a dream to move into his parents' house someday as its new owner. When you hear him say things like that, it gives you an idea of those mental health issues his lawyer and the prosecutor talked about. You're saying you want to live in the house where you killed your parents and pay for it with the trust you're getting because they're dead? He said he was sorry that other people were inconvenienced for what he had done. Inconvenienced. To me, that doesn't seem as much having no remorse as not having the capacity to understand what happened. Of course, he was found competent to stand trial, so what do I know? Gary and Laura's friends and family read impact statements at the sentencing with varying degrees of sadness and anger. A cousin said that Nick's relationship with his parents was hard because of his rebellious nature and his hot temper that would sometimes appear out of nowhere. She called Laura a loving mother who was only forced to get that restraining order against her son because she lived in fear of what he might do. She said it was never if Nick was going to kill them, but when. According to Nick's uncle, his parents had struggled with him as far back as 4 years old. He said about the crimes, "None of it was unexpected, unwanted, but not unexpected." Laura's best friend said that this crime was committed by their own blood is hard to comprehend. The only way I'm able to accept this is to know that they are finally at peace. But Nick, your hell on earth has only just begun. It seems to me that Nick had been going through hell long before this. The judge consoled friends and family by saying that almost no one in Michigan gets parole on a second-degree murder charge. He said, "Nick Johnson does not deserve to be paroled at his minimum. He does not deserve to walk among the free. He's a cold-blooded killer capable of inhumane and merciless behaviors. And on a scale of all the murders I've dealt with personally, which now numbers well over 100, Nick Johnson is among the least deserving of leniency or clemency. Nick was sentenced to between 29 and 69 years in prison. Now, here's the thing. This isn't the only missing persons case where he was a person of interest. In May 2018, Nick was seen with a 17-year-old named Bonifacio Pena. They were both staying with a woman in Nick's hometown, Portage. The two were seen leaving her townhouse on May 19th, and this is the last time anyone saw the teenager alive. When Nick returned hours later, he was alone. He said Facio had gotten into a car with friends, but he was carrying the boy's bandana and acting nervous. You won't be surprised to learn that after Facio's disappearance, Nick tried to claim his belongings. So far, no arrests have been made in the case. The last news about it is from April 2021, when police conducted a helicopter search that didn't result in anything new. I hope they stay on top of the case and get some closure for Facio's family, like they did for the family of Gary and Laura Johnson. Gary Allen Johnson was born in Kalamazoo on January 25, 1956. He knew from the time he was in junior high that he wanted to be an architect, and he would go on to work at the architecture firm Tower Pinkster for 37 years. Laura Louise Vander Stratton was born on November 5, 1956, also in Kalamazoo. She had recently retired from the West Michigan Cancer Center. The executive director there said, "Often her work was behind the scenes doing data collection, but her work was so critical to what we know about cancer, treatment, and survivorship." Gary and Laura met all of the way back in elementary school, but they didn't start dating until about 10 years after they graduated. Laura was a so-called girly girl and the kind of person who always followed the rules, but she had the heart of an artist. She made jewelry, loved birds, and had a dove named Sydney. Gary was a quick wit and fit in easily with Laura's family. He loved golf and cars and was able to make his dream of owning a sports car come true before he died. They had been married for 35 years. I always feel for parents who seem so lovely but have ended up with a troubled child. I can't imagine living in fear of your own kid after all the things you've probably done for him in his childhood. I'm not saying I know their parenting was perfect, but you know they didn't deserve this. It really makes you wonder what more could have been done to protect them. I hope they're at peace now, and I hope that Nick is able to get the help he needs in prison. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.